If you make a habit out of seeking you, you will find you. But it's something you have to do every day because you are elusive. And people don't realize that, they are elusive. And who you are is ever changing. So don't think that the person you found yesterday is going to be who you find today, because you learn something every minute of your life.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you are hearing this, you have once again tuned to the Consequence of Habit podcast. This is your host, JT. This week, I sit down with Nick Pollard. Backstory on this is I was doom scrolling one day on Instagram, and I come across this guy just walking down the beach, talking about being a people pleaser, talking about the negative effects of people pleasing, of not setting boundaries, both internal and external. He's talking about being a former alcoholic, somebody who dealt with ADHD or ADD or whatever we're calling it this week. And I, for those reasons, I immediately perked up. And to be honest with you, I almost wanted, I say this in the beginning, I almost wanted to discredit him because he's talking on a platform where it's all about pleasing people. It's what we put out. We put something, these things out into the world with the hopes that these positive things come back. But the more I listened to him, the more truth I heard in what he was saying. You're going to hear from this guy's story, man. He is 100% lived on both sides of the habit spectrum. So he understands his mind. He's made these positive changes. He's done the work. So some of the things we're going to cover, not caring about your past trauma. Well, let me rephrase that. It's not about not caring, but it's about not letting it control you. Not letting it control your actions, your life. Words of warning, this conversation is not for young people's ears, right? So if you've got this playing and the little ones are around, you might want to hit pause on this one and come back to it when you've got a different audience around. So this is a heavy conversation, but we still have some laughter in it. I got a ton from it. I hope you guys get as much from it as I did. Make sure that you log on to Nick's website, whether go through TikTok, you do through Instagram, you're going to get a copy. You can download a free copy of his Bulletproof Boundaries Guide. He's got a book coming up. We don't have a release date on that yet or in the info, but we'll make sure we get that to you. But without further ado, please welcome to the podcast, Nick Pollard. I love talking to people. I love talking to people that have lived on both sides of the habit spectrum, right? Let's talk about the side that was the people pleaser, that was the guy with a alcohol misuse issues or whatever we want to call it this week.
Sure.
Let's talk about that, and then we'll
just
build.
Call me being a drunk.
Drunk. Right? Yeah, let's
just talk about a drunk. Yeah. Right. By the way, I love the way you said that, because there's always, you know, there's a new moniker for everything every single week.
Yeah.
With regard to like what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. Yeah. So to answer your question, I guess we're going to tell my story a little bit.
I think it's relevant.
Probably relevant. So I didn't come from nowhere. I had what I remembered for many years to be a very good childhood. And at one point in my 20s, that turned out to not be true. Hmm. And so when you bury the kinds of memories that I buried, it changes you, like on a fundamental kind of molecular level. And I haven't ever said it that way. So that's kind of a challenge for me right now, actually. But, so I want you to imagine the worst thing you can think of your dad doing to you. And that's what happened. Mm-hmm. Right. And through that timeline that I didn't remember, some things had kind of come to light in my family, and then I did remember, right? So I was 29 years old. I had one kid and another on the way, and my life completely fell apart, like completely. So, I mean, everything. I lost my house, I lost my wife, I lost my cars, everything. And that was a result of, you know, kind of severe childhood trauma. I ended up in a mental institution for a bit of time, you know, suicidal and homicidal tendencies, and I was ready to kill somebody.
Yeah.
Right. and when you go through that and you're 29 and you had emotionally immature parents, you know, one of which was highly abusive and the other, which was, you know, emotionally immature and kind of, you know, focused on her own thing, which is fine. My mom and I are good now, but, it's just the reality of my childhood. And, I had no coping skills for this. Like I had no ability. I didn't know how to hit the ejection handle. I didn't know how to right the ship. Right. So, the best way I thought to do that, was to drink a lot. Mm. So I did. And right. And then, you know, drinking, if you do that right, if you do drinking as a modality for numbing pain, if you do that well, that generally turns into, use of any type of stimulant in addition to, drinking.
Right.
Cause then you can't drink enough. Otherwise then your party stops. And then,
yeah.
So, you know, then drinking turned into cocaine and that lasted for about a year. And I got a little better, right? I met my third wife, by the way, I'm great at getting married. Not so great at staying that way. Anyway, I met my third wife and I'd kind of gotten better. I'd done some therapy. I'd done some healing. And I would say that I was probably teetering, you know, I was kind of at the breaking point between two, you know, relatively toxic extremes. And, that was in 2016 and I had kind of gained some weight and I wasn't in the best shape and things weren't, it was a little dicey. Right. But then my dad died. Right. So then all of those wounds, like just laid me waste and I went right off the fucking deep end, like right over the fucking falls, like Houdini or the other guy, whatever, the Niagara Falls. Anyway, went over the falls and, the next thing I know, you know, it's, I don't know, 6 months later. So he died in May. I was drinking a lot, like a lot. That kind of kicked me into a, let's say 15 drinks a day kind of habit. And then that drink, you know, that kind of, and then it just started leveling up. Right? So it was 15 drinks a day and 16 and then 17 was more.
Nick, I've heard you talking about being in sales and you're obviously great at communicating. And I know we're going to get into the people pleasing part of that, but were you still holding a job? Were you at least on the surface successful to some portion of, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it, more so than probably I'd ever been.
Yeah.
Right. So this is the weird part is, so I'd wanted to be an entrepreneur my whole life. I've been a coach since 2009, even when I was that's drunk and cokehead, I was a coach. I've been coaching for a long time. And then during that time, from 09 until really, I guess, 15, I had kind of stayed in the coaching field, kind of in and out. I had launched two companies, you know, one did well, one didn't. It was a great idea, just, you know, poorly executed, wrong people. It was kind of a misfit for my time in life. I needed to not be a drunk to make that work. But I was a dating coach and I did exceptionally well. And I managed to get rid of that company. And then in 2015, I had lost my job at a software sales company, not because I was a drunk, but because I was really good at it. Actually, I had figured out how to hack the system and created a way that I could do my job in like 5 minutes every single day.
That's a bad scenario for somebody with a drinking problem.
Right. Well, it's a real bad scenario, but I made it work for 6 months. But what they were mad about was that my hours were low and my production was high.
Yeah.
So they ended up letting me go. And so I went to work. I went to work driving a bike bar. I don't know if you've ever seen a bike bar.
I've seen a bike bar in Nashville.
Yeah. So, yeah. Oh, you live in Nashville?
No, okay. No. I've been to Nashville, okay. And I've saw about 1,000 of those things. Yeah.
Yeah. So I used to drive one of those. So I got a job driving bike bars. It was a great job. It was a lot of fun. Sure. But yeah. One can imagine for somebody who likes to drink, this is a problem.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm just for, you know, all weekend. And I was making great money. I was making like $1,500 a week. So, you know, here I am making all this money and, you know, it's all in cash. So, you know, that's the equivalent of making $2,000 a week.
Right.
And it was great. Right. Well, fast forward to the end of the season. And I'd done pretty well, but I thought I could do better. And, I've managed to kind of weasel my way into this deal where I could buy a bike bar for myself.
Yeah.
With no money down. Right. So I bought one And I started a competitive company in Denver to my old bosses.
Okay.
Well, I'm also not dumb, and I realized they had been in the business for a long time. So I invested. So I took, I didn't have any money in the bike, except for I had to repair the hell out of it because it was brand spanking used, and it was in rough shape when it showed up. So I had to like paint it, and I had to do all this welding, and I had to rebuild it. It was an absolute disaster. Anyway, so I go through all this, and I took all the money that I had made, and I had pre-sold before it even showed up all these bike bar tours on Groupon. So I had like 5 weeks of revenue that was already built into this thing by the time it showed up. So I was under the gun when it got there. And of course I'm drinking and I'm working and I'm drinking and I'm working and I'm drinking and I'm working. And I finally got out of the road. Whatever. Well, anyway, I launched that company. And I took all that money and I put it into advertising through Google and, you know, pay-per-click and all that stuff. And I just crushed everybody. Like I just decimated my competition. So much so that they were giving me referrals for sending business to them.
Wow.
So they were paying for my marketing at this point.
Amazing.
Right. So that ended up, I bought another bike and then I bought another bike and I had three of them. The company was doing like, I don't know, $750 a year, which is not bad for a little entertainment.
Yeah. For riding around a bike with some booze. It's pretty good.
Right. For getting drunk all day long is not a bad game.
That's right.
Anyway, so that company, and I did pretty well for about 3 years, but so that happened in 15. And then 16, my old man dies. And once again, my life goes off the fucking rails. And I went to the bottle hard. Like it was like booze and coke. That's what we're doing. Like that's how we're getting through the summer. Cause it like he died in May. I had an entire summer of bike bars to run. Right. And that goes from like May until the end of October, every day, all day, 12 hours a day.
Do you even remember that period?
Loosely. I mean, not great.
Yeah. I mean, even if you do, it's not I can't imagine it's a great, it seems like a really shitty, really long day.
I mean, it was a hell of a lot of fun. I'll admit that I had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know, that was 16. You know, the day my dad died is also the day my marriage ended, which is interesting.
Jesus, Nick.
Right. That was a rough day. But anyway, so yeah, I was very successful in that endeavor. But that really kicked me into, you know, we don't have to go through the whole story after that. It's like 16, 17, 18. I just drank for the whole time, you know. It was brutal.
I heard you talking about, you know, there's a rock bottom. And then there's like, hey, I'm living in my mom's basement. I needed help. I ended up getting help and you get sober and there's some ups and downs in that process. But everything that I hear you speak about and going back to what I said in the beginning, the reason I believe it resonates with people is how raw and authentic it feels. Now you've even said, I was coaching. I had a dating coaching thing. You know, you're on your third marriage at that point, right? Mm-hmm. You're coaching during this entire time. Mm-hmm. What was that feeling like? And this is the only reason I'm asking you this, right? So like I said, I've got this podcast called A Consequence of Habit. I run a nonprofit called under the same title.
Sure.
And struggle at times when, man, like I talk to some amazing people on here. If I'm not following through, and to be 100% honest, I just went through a period where I relapsed. I didn't drink, but my mindset, right? Like I know a very familiar feeling of what that feels like, escaping, not wanting to, like, you know, not being present, putting stuff out there that I know is not authentic, you know? So I asked that question not to say, hey, I got you. Probably more to go, were you feeling the same way I'm describing now? When you were coaching these things that, or could you compartmentalize? I know I could tell you to do, if you do what I tell you to do, things are going to go great. That doesn't mean I need to follow them. I'm not talking about now, Nick. I honestly want to make sure I'm phrasing this in the correct way.
Sure. Well, I'll make you a deal. How about this? If you piss me off, I'll tell you
that. There we go. The people displeaser. And I appreciate that because that's like, not
just go nuts and swing for the fences. And if I get my feelings hurt, I'll let you know. So to answer your question, there's really no answer because like my dating coaching practice was probably one of the most fun times of my life. Okay. Like it was one of the most fun times I ever had in my life.
Yeah.
I was drunk a lot of that time.
Okay.
Right. I was also married a good chunk of that time.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
So if you take a people pleaser and you put, and you pour alcohol on top of them, what do you get?
You get a really confident people pleaser. I don't know.
Well, if you take, so think of it like a cocktail. Okay. So let's say I take vodka and I take people pleasing. I put people pleasing in one of those shaker jars and I put some vodka on top of it. And I shake it up. I can tell you the exact cocktail it gets you. It's a narcissist.
Okay. Well, there you go. You answered my question.
Right. So I believed I was doing everything right.
So I guess the real question was, when did you realize you weren't? And I guess I almost want to, I don't know if I can answer for you. Maybe that was when you went, I don't know if you did a 12-step, whatever process you went through, because I hear brutal truth in what you say, you know, in that, like that podcast.
Well, the short answer to when did I realize that I was, did I realize I was a fraud or did I, or when did I realize I had a problem?
I guess the problem would have to come first or no?
Well, so realistically, you know, I think fraud is dictated by my inability to deliver what I say I was going to deliver. I always delivered what I said I was going to deliver.
Yeah.
Right. I said, you're going to have fun on the bikes. You had fun on the bikes. I said, you were going to get dates. You were going to get dates. Like I delivered. So I was never fraudulent in that. It's just that I was an imposter in my own life because I couldn't live the things that I was teaching.
That's just a better choice of a word. Yeah. Sure. Imposter.
Right. Yeah. So I had created a character as a dating coach, which is what most dating coaches do, by the way. And it's really good for somebody who doesn't want to be themselves. Hmm. Right. And if you combine that with alcohol, what you get is a kind of rampant, overwhelming narcissism. And that's what I was. Right. Well, in 2018, I was at a bar, shout out to the Retro Room in Denver. They're still there. They're good friends. And it was 11 o'clock in the morning. I think it was April 16th or 17th. It would have been the 16th, maybe, because that was I counted my last day. My first day sober was the 17th of April. And I'll never forget it. I had woken up next to somebody I love very much still to this day. Who's a good friend of mine. And she had put her head on my chest. She could hear my heart beating. And she's like, are you okay? And I said, no, I'm really sick. And I laughed. I said, I guess I'll go to the bar. And she was like me. We were both pretty sick. And that's what I did. And I went into the bar and I sat down, I ordered a burger and ordered my drink. And this was probably about 9:30. And at that point, I'm drinking double vodka sodas at 9:30 in the morning.
All right.
Double vodka soda with a Jameson back. So that's stout cocktail.
Yeah. You're going hard in the paint at that point.
Right. And I had a burger. I ordered a burger at 9:30 in the morning. And I'm sitting there. This is what I did every day. Like, this was my deal. Right? And there was this brief flicker, and I'll never forget it. It was like a flicker of light that kind of came through the windows to my right. And I don't know what caused it or where it came from, but it reminded me of like a flash, like a bomb going off. And I was looking at the bar. I saw the flicker. Something in my mind changed. And I went, oh shit, I'm going to die here. Like it just, like I'm dying. And really took me back. I was like, oh, okay. All right. We're okay. I kind of steadied my hand. I'm like, all right, we're not dead, but we are dying. Is that what we're deciding to do? Like, is that the decision we're making? If we're making that decision today, let's just keep doing this. Right? And it's okay. At that point, I was like, it's okay. Like either way, if we're deciding to die, let's die. Right? Let's just take it. Let's just go out with a drink in our hand and a laugh with our friends. Let's just end it. Or do we need to live? And somehow my brain keeled up, you know, came back online for 2 seconds. It's like, whoa, let's live. Live is good. Live was better, is what my brain said. And I was like, all right, I guess we're going to live then. And I picked up the phone and I called my mom and I said, Mom, I need you to sell everything I own. I need you to cancel my lease of my apartment, do whatever it takes to cancel it. Move me into your second bedroom. I need you to drop me into a detox center today. And she said, okay, I'll be there in 20 minutes. Took her an hour. At which point I was like, so I had a few more drinks while I was waiting.
Yeah, you gotta get it in. I mean, you don't have much time.
I went to the bar next door, had another burger, had 4 more shots. So when I checked into detox, I blew a 0.6. Or no, it was a 0.8. By the way, the legal drinking limit for driving an automobile is a 0.08.
Yeah, no, you're coming in full octane. You were
right. The doctor looked at me and he goes, how are you even breathing? This is who I am now. It took me 4 days to blow zero to get out of there. That was one of the worst times of my life. That place is like a jail. You know, I don't recommend Denver detox, by the way. Denver Health is not the place to go do that. Go to a hospital. And then that put me in rehab. And then rehab is kind of when the journey really started.
I've heard you talking about doing work on yourself, right? And you've taken a lot of time to do that. And this isn't about me, but my story wasn't quite, you know, everyone has their bottom, right? Sure. Mine, you know, I almost felt like half a drunk when I quit, because I would go and I would hear these stories of people that like their lives fucking imploded. Like, and I'm going, all right, well, I'm not that guy. Like,
right. I'm not enough of a piece of shit to be in this room.
Yeah, that's right. I'm like, you know, I drink too much, which makes me feel like crap. For some reason, I feel like crap in this room because I didn't drink enough. Like it's a weird dynamic, but you reach your rock bottom. And as you start to see things, the cause and effect, right? Without going into specifics and then how that relates to people pleasing. At what point did you know, going through the 12 steps, whatever it was, were you like, oh wait, maybe this is the reason I do this. Not that it matters. And I've heard you talk about it before, like it doesn't fucking matter. Right. At what point did you go, all right, I guess that was a reasonable response for what I went through. Now I got to do something about it.
2021.
Okay. At 6:45.
So what happened was, in rehab, I'm a really good student and I'm a really good participant in group therapy. And I'm also a really good coach. I'm very talented at this. And I saw some gaps in the coverage at the rehab center as I was kind of exiting. And I said that to the ownership. It's like, hey, I see that there's some holes here I could plug.
Yeah.
If you give me like a couple of days, I'll put together a proposal and I'll bring it back to you and kind of walk you through how I do that. She said, okay, great. I did that. And as I graduated from rehab and walked out the client door, I turned around and walked in the staff door. So I was like teaching in the rehab center the day after I left. And that, well, it's a terrible fucking idea, by the way.
For you, why is that a bad idea?
I didn't know how to do sober. I didn't know who I was.
There you go.
Right? And anybody who's newly sober knows that. Like, well, no, they don't know that, but they know that after about 3 years of being sober, that the first 3 years, you don't know who the hell you are. And you don't find out, you know, immediately. Like, if you look at the sobriety journey for most people, it starts in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you know, most of the time, if you stick with the program, you'll get there. Like you'll get to a year, you get to 18 months. You'll hit some bumps along the way, potentially. You'll figure it out over time. But the reason that they give you those chips every year is actually, I don't know if you know this, but Napoleon was the first person to give away war medals. And he gave them away when people were making fun of him. They said, men don't care about trinkets. He said, I disagree that men live for trinkets and toys. Right. So, the reason they give you those is because you're not finding who you are. You're just staying sober. You're just not doing a thing. And you need a constant thing to shoot for in order to get there. And that's part of why AA and I don't work well together anymore. It's because I don't see the value in the whole system, but to say all that is to say that I wasn't ready to take the responsibility for other people's sobriety, you know, whether it was their sobriety or mine. I wasn't ready for the responsibility of that. And it was my own hubris that got me the job.
I'm going to guess because of sales, you're a great people. You were a good people pleaser.
Yeah.
Which means you're probably pretty freaking good at reading people.
Yeah. And I'm an exceptional liar. That hurt a little.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, I get it. And the reason I reached out to you is like, I mean, there's parts of me. Yeah. Yeah. You know your own. I mean, I could in the first 10 seconds before we hit record, I could talk to somebody.
Yeah.
I know. I could tell them like, oh, here we go.
Right.
You know, like, how much of this am I going to have to edit? No, I'm joking. Because right. we could go into some places. So yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
So what happened was in that arc of a story is I ended up in a relationship with somebody that's pretty toxic because I was pretty toxic. We had one of those white hot romances,
you know,
that you have when you're newly sober, like everything's great and you fuck better. And I'm good in bed anyway. And I was really good sober. And so we kind of went through that and then we lasted about 2.5 years. And then that all ended in 2021. So I went through COVID, incidentally. So we had had this kind of drinking binge for a year. And then we went through COVID totally sober.
You guys got it all wrong.
Yeah, we did it all wrong. Should drink that whole time. So 21 rolls up. It's January 11th. Incidentally, I guess the 11th is a big day for me. That was a, I got sober again on the beach here in Huntington Beach with there's an AA meeting at Tower 13, I think. Tower 11. Here in Huntington Beach, still there. It's a really good meeting. They're good people, but they got me sober that day. And I guess it was about then that I started to really question, like, what is this? Like, why am I struggling so fucking much to keep this on the rails? Like, what is the actual problem? I've been a coach long enough to ask myself the questions, like, what am I drinking about rather than why do I drink? Mm. And that was a big question. Like, what am I drinking about? And it was like, you hate your life. I'm like, why do I hate my life? I make a lot of money. Like I had a nice house, I had a nice car. I bought an RV. I renovated it. Like I had really cool stuff. My girlfriend's hot and we were swingers and like all the outward things, like I've got it. And I realized, I think all at once that I had been living somebody else's life.
Mm.
Right. And that really hurt like a lot.
Yeah.
Like it hurt really bad, to realize that like I'd spent 41 years, trying to be something my dad would like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Trying to be something that my mom would be proud of. Or, and I never stopped and asked myself, what do I want? And, I went through this kind of 3-month period. Well, the first month of that kind of drinking, you know how that sobriety journey looks. I was, the only thing I could do was roll out of bed and eat Sour Patch Kids. Like I was on COVID unemployment still. And I'm like, fuck, I'm going to die. I'm living in this terrible Airbnb in Orange County here in Huntington Beach. It's not terrible. It's just kind of a shack and it's a mess, but it's our mess. And so it was March 16th, I think, of 21. I got a bug up my ass and I'd been sober for 2 months, 3 months, I guess. And I was sitting in my room and I was in tears. I was crying. I was on the phone with my now girlfriend, a friend of mine. And at the time I said, I don't know what the fuck to do here. Like I'm really lost and I'm really sad and I don't want to do this anymore. Like I didn't even know if I want to be alive. Mm. And, I booked a ticket. I got online and I said, what's open? Just Googled like what countries are open.
Not hotels, not
Costa Rica popped up. Yeah. Right. Costa Rica popped up. And I said, fuck it. I'll go to Costa Rica for a couple of weeks and I'll come back. Well, got to Costa Rica. I didn't come back. I was gone for 2.5 years. I went from, and I just chased the opens, honestly. So it was like Costa Rica, then Mexico, then Panama, then Colombia, then Uruguay and Argentina and all these things. Finally, the last on the list ended up being Japan. And
you're sober this entire time?
No, no, God, no.
Oh.
So
sorry.
No. So I did a year sober. I did a year fully, totally sober.
Okay.
On the year of the day of my year anniversary, I had an itch that needed to be scratched and I said, I think I'm okay. And I was, And that was interesting. Because I did something that most people in the alcoholic world don't think you can do, which is to go back. But I had spent a year like healing and talking and doing nothing but getting this out of my heart.
Did you have any apprehension about, I guess, being the people displeaser, but like putting out that out there because you know these guidelines, right? You know how the rooms are about that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Did you're like, hey man, this is my life and this worked for me, as you know, getting sober or staying sober is a individual thing. And I'm, you know,
it's really only until recently that I've been able to say it.
Listen, man, I was in a room and I told them that my daughter, she was at college and she was coming home, and I was like, I asked her, or my wife asked her something, hey, what meal would you like? And she's like, I want dad to make chicken Marsala. Mm-hmm. And I told them that I bought a bottle of Marsala wine. Mm-hmm. And I'm cooking it and the vapor comes up, right? The steam, sure. And it hits you in the face. And it was even the process of opening the bottle that seemed very familiar to me.
Sure.
And I thought that was the place to tell people that, right? That my experience, because it's supposed to be, I was dead freaking wrong.
Right.
And
you inhaled vapor. You probably had to get a first aid chip.
No. Yeah, right. That's right. I mean, this old guy he was pissed at me. I mean, I guess I get it for him. And he didn't mean, you know, he wants the best for me, I think.
Sure.
I didn't know him, but that's the whole point of those rooms. So I could see that, you know, I ask you that question because if I put myself in your shoes, I would feel, even if you were 100% at work for you, just apprehensive because,
oh my God. Yeah. So for years, you know, for the first year after, so in 22, I wouldn't really talk about it. And you'll notice I don't call myself an alcoholic anymore. I call myself a recovered alcoholic. Yeah. And the reason I call myself as recovered is because I've recovered, and, I'm never going to fault the rooms of AA. They helped me get where I got. Like they helped me come out of the darkness, and they gave me friends when nobody would give me friends, and they gave me love when nobody would give me love. And I get emotional talking about it, but the idea that everyone's sick forever is fucking toxic as shit. Like if it helps you to say that you're an alcoholic forever to keep you off the sauce, then do that. And I appreciate that.
Yeah.
But don't put that shit on me, because I've lived my life in a way that has been pretty awful. And I've seen some things that most people don't see. And it's not the worst of what humanity has to offer, by the way.
That's right.
I've seen. Right. And I've managed to heal those things. And to tell me that I have to do it your subscribed or, you know, your pre-described or predetermined way in order for it to be valid is fucking horseshit.
The biggest part of it that I've come to realize recently is the brutal honesty part.
Yeah.
Like that's its common thread. Like, I don't care where you go. Mm-hmm. That's the part, right? Like,
yep, that part sucks, man.
Yeah. And what I appreciate about people going back, and you're talking to someone who hasn't been into a room in well over a year, right?
Sure.
And then not doing the other work that I should be doing with the mind, with the operating system that I have, right?
Right.
Is that, you know, they're talking about things being cunning. You can trick yourself. You trick yourself into thinking you got it figured out. Or not even that you've got it figured out. You don't realize in real time that needle has fallen back into the groove.
That's a great way to say that. That's a really great way to say that.
And that scares the shit out of me.
Man, what a cool way to say that. The needle has fallen back into the groove. Never even occurred to me to think of it that way.
Yeah, I've been doing some soul searching here.
Oh boy, proud of you. That's really when it happened. Was 21, and I started recording videos in May or June of 2021, and from that I ended up I recorded a video every day from May until June, and then or May until I don't know, probably September. And then I did three a day from September until December, and nothing was happening. Nothing was happening. And Then December 3rd of 21, my first video hit, and it was off to the races. It's just been exponential ever since. So, you know, I get 1% growth, you know, depending on the month, like 1 to 2%. That's a lot on 400K.
That's a lot. Yeah. It's big, right?
Yeah.
Compound interest stuff like,
right. Yeah. So it just keeps doing that.
Hey, having done all that work, how do you describe your relationship, like as far as dopamine and the feedback you're getting from others in with the social media? Again, I'm only asking this because it's something I've struggled with.
Well, it's 100% addictive.
Yeah.
And you know, in your questionnaire, you actually asked, is there a habit that you're trying to work on right now? And it's, incidentally, it's my social media habit.
Mine too.
Right.
I honestly realized that I'm the same triggers. Like, yeah, that's when I right. say I relapsed, it's, I just came to realize it.
That yeah. That's where you went to, right? You went to social media cause it's easy and you're not getting drunk. So you're not turning into an asshole, but you're kind of turning into an asshole and you're negating your own goals and it's making you unhappy and all those things. Right. So, it was actually this morning I started working on it. So, you know, I woke up, I've been struggling to sleep the last few days. It often happens around my birthday, which is April 8th. So just kind of struggling to get any rest. And I woke up this morning at 3:30. Normally I would just be pissed off.
Yeah.
And like, fuck, I can't go back to sleep. I was mad. And, today I was like, you know what? I'm going to use it. I'm just going to use it. And I got up and I made myself some coffee and I pet my cats and, I read a little bit. I wrote my journal. It's one of my big things I do every day. And,
yeah.
I mean, I ended up, you know, being able to get out a piece of content. You know, I wrote a for my newsletter and then I edited two pieces I wrote and recorded yesterday. And like, I got a ton done between like 3 a.m. and 7:30. And then I'm like, well, shit, I'm still up. So let's go to the gym. Then I went to the gym, then I did a podcast and then I took a nap and now I'm here with you. And so I ended up using it. But normally what I would have done was get up and just scrolled for 5 hours.
Dude, we're so insane. We are insane.
Yeah. Like I would have wasted an entire day laying on the couch, scrolling in my underwear, right? Where what I decided to do today, and I wrote it, so I've been writing, this is something I've learned about habit. Maybe this is, you know, applicable to what we're talking about is, if I write in my journal that I will or will not do something, I generally do it.
Yeah. Same.
Right. Yeah. So I wrote in my journal, I will not check my social media today. And I haven't. I just haven't. Because my mind turns on, like the minute I pick up my phone, I'm like, oh, you said you weren't going to do that. Right? One of the things I believe about confidence is really important in this. Like your habits dictate your confidence because the more shit you do that you say you'll do defines how confident you become as a person.
It's the truth, man. Because to you can put stuff out to the world and you can even convince the other world or the rest of the world. But you know. Like, you know, I had Tyler Hamilton on. Tyler Hamilton was a professional cyclist. He raced with Lance Armstrong, right, on the team. And he talked about he had board meetings with himself at 2 a.m. No matter what they put out to the world, no matter how much everyone believed him, he's like, I couldn't run from it. All right. Like it was haunting me because I knew the truth. So yeah. And then going back to the social media, I truly think this is an experiment happening in real time. And when we talk about what our baseline dopamine, and we can get into ADD and whether, you know, your thoughts on whether people with ADD just have a lower baseline of dopamine. It's one of the reasons we just like kind of chase things, that give us that. But yeah, it scares me. I you know, I'll be in an airport, I'll look around and I go, if there was a time machine, right? Somebody came back from 19, you don't have to go back that far, 85, they would think we lost our fucking minds. They would look around and go, you've lost your minds.
Well, yeah. That's true. And if you look at how literature and art play out over time, you'll see that the rise of the zombie movie has come from social media.
Yeah.
Because there's nobody thinking anymore. It's part of the reason I love podcasting. And part of the reason I've thought about starting my own, but I'm on enough of them that I don't need to. I've thought about starting a podcast because there's some real thinkers that I really respect. Chris Williamson's one of those that I like. Chris, if you listen to this, hit a brother up. Like I want to be on your channel here real soon. Help me launch this book. But Ryan Holiday, people that are studying the Stoics, studying the old minds and really understanding, we've been having these same problems all of humanity.
Listen, we like to think we're the smartest people because we happen to live in 2024.
Right.
I mean, Ryan Holiday's book, The Obstacle is the Way, you're a perfect example of that exact thing. What stands in the way becomes the way.
Right.
Right?
Right. And so, here I am, 5 years after, 6 years, 7 years after first getting sober, and then 3 years after I did it again, and then now I'm mostly sober. I live a soberish life. I don't drink very often, but when I do, I do. I find joy in knowing that I figured out something. Wow, this is really going to hurt my feelings to say. I find joy in knowing that I found something in 2018 that not a lot of people figure out, which is the purpose and meaning of life is to die and to love. That's it. We are here to get our hearts broken. That's it. We're here to get our hearts broken.
It's the yin and the yang.
Right. We are here to love and to die. Like we're born to die. In that timeline, we get to love. That's the only thing that makes this experience worth doing. And then you see people, worshiping at the altars of, Jocko Willink and, even the Green Beret guy you were talking about. I appreciate those people. I think they're very inspirational, but 99.999% of people don't want to be those people. They think they do. Right? Who wouldn't want to be as tough as a Green Beret? Who wouldn't want to be as tough as a Navy SEAL, right? But I don't. I'll tell you why. Because I also recognize that to be that tough means you have to engage in your own psychopathy.
Yeah. And I think that was interesting conversation with Ben was talking about that is, we have an identity, right? Especially as young men, and we know that our prefrontal cortex isn't developed till a certain age. And, there is something I've even heard you talk about the relationship of pain. And you were talking more about, I believe, an emotional pain, but the ability for someone to suffer and get through something, there is something that we find admirable in that. And there is a connection you get to others. It's like, I would think that when you're at your rock bottom and somebody else is at their rock bottom and you go through that process together, you don't even have to fucking like them, but you've gone through it with them and you're going to feel a sense of connection. So what was interesting about his story was to hear all of that ripped away because of his own actions. And then how do you rebuild from that? And that was
That is interesting.
Yeah.
All taken from you. I can't imagine that, I can imagine a sort of pain that way in that, my life was kind of destroyed and everything I'd worked for taken away, but that was his total.
16 years.
That was the whole life. Right.
Yeah. And you've watched
brotherhood. Right?
And yeah, you've watched. That's right. You've watched your best friends die. And now this thing that you're part of is gone. And I thought it was just a fascinating conversation. But we're talking about you now. So let's not talk about Ben.
Sure. So that was a really painful moment. I think just a moment ago was to recognize that what I just recognized was, I've been saying this for a long time. I've believed for a long time that the meaning of life, I used to say that love and adventure was all there is. But when you whittle down what is adventure, right, that's risking death. And when you whittle down love, there is no whittling down. Love is love. And I think that we're here to love people. I think we're here to love ourselves. I think we're here to engage in that agape, whole, human love, whole world love. And, without sounding too hokey, I'm going to break out the beads and start chanting.
Dude, I'm with you if we do it.
Right. We're also here to die.
Yeah.
And when you recognize your own mortality and then you recognize the gift of that mortality is love, it is pain. the gift is the pain, then everything kind of falls into place.
It's beautifully said, man. I think that's what scares me, not to keep harping on social media, is it tricks us into thinking that we got to feel good all the time.
Right. Well, yeah, you've got a whole generation of kids that think they're pieces of shit because they don't have Ferraris. I mean, I used to not be able to see what Tom Brady drove. Now I do. Right. And you compare that to the life of the average everyday human, and they start to think that that's what they're supposed to be. And not everybody's supposed to be that. Right. There will always be people ahead of you that it's always going to be. And I do well. Like I do well for myself. I'm able to afford to live in California anyway, and that's a win.
Yeah, there's something to be said about that,
right? And relatively comfortably. So I don't have a yacht, and I drive a paid off Nissan Pathfinder. It's got a dent in the front fender, and I have a 2-bedroom apartment that I fucking adore, and I'm a stone's throw from the beach and I walk there every day. And it's a simple life. But that simplicity is by design, right? And I think what we have is we've created, so most people are living by default anyway, right? Most people are living in this kind of, I hate to use the Tate references, but you know, the kind of the matrix of what's real and what's not. And when I pulled myself out of that, when I unplugged from what does everybody else say I should have? What does everybody else have? And I asked myself what I wanted, you know, Chris Williamson actually asked this question better than I do, which, what would you want to want?
I like that.
And when I asked myself, what would I want to want? I came up with the idea that I would like peace and contentment in small and large doses based on need. I want to live in a warm place near a beach. And I want to experience the good things when I'm experiencing the good things. And remember what Kurt Vonnegut said, which is, when things are well, I beg of you to stop and murmur or exclaim at some point that if this isn't nice, I don't know what is. Mm. And that's it. That is the meaning of it all for me. Like, what would I want to want? It's like peace and contentment when I need it, and a pretty quiet, calm life. With enough money that I don't have to worry about my family while I'm alive, because I'm dying with zero.
It's coming for us all, isn't it?
Yep. Every single one of us. No one here gets out alive. Jim Morrison said that.
Nick, somebody wants to find out more about you. They liked what they hear in this. Potentially they want to work with you as a coach. Where do they find you?
Well, it's easy enough to find me. ThePeopleDispleaser.com or my name, NickPollard.com. I'll point you at my website. You can book a call with me one-on-one there. Most effective thing you can do if you really want to know my thoughts is get on my mailing list. Both those pages will point you to that as well. But if you want to follow me on social media, that helps me a lot. At the People Displeaser on Instagram or YouTube or TikTok or Facebook, provided TikTok's still around in a week anyway.
That's right.
Right. Never know. So I'm easy to find at the People Displeaser. Just put that in. Or if you just Google People Displeaser, you'll find me. I'm the only bald guy walking around the streets of Huntington Beach every day. If you want to come take a walk with me as well.
There's something to be said about, I'm going to guess, how are you, 42, 43 in there?
Yep, 43.
Balding white guy walking down the beach and have captured the attention of a lot of people. And that's not by accident. So keep doing what you're doing.
I mean, I don't know if it's not by, I mean, it was by accident. It was legitimately by accident. But now it's... Man, I'm really blessed. I really am. People stop me on the streets and stuff now, and they tell me that, you know, you'd be amazed at how many people tell me I got them sober. I mean, it boggles my mind. Literally boggles. I mean, it's fantastic how many people tell me every day that I got them sober. It's 2 to 3 a day.
Is that hard to take at first when you have people reach out, like specifically if people come and they've really dropped some heavy stuff on you? Like, hey, what you said. And then fill in the blank. Is there a responsibility? I don't know if responsibility is the right word, but how did you take that at first?
Jordan Peterson talks about this. I didn't know what he meant at first when he said most people aren't real happy to see him. They're in pain.
I get it.
Right. And I've had people reach out to me and say that they were in a tub ready to die, like in a bathtub about to kill themselves, and watching TikTok, and they got out because of what I've said. And it is scary to know that that kind of influence is, to know that I have that kind of influence is really scary. And then to know that there are others that have that kind of influence is also really scary. So be careful what you look for, kids. There's some bad folks out there on the internet.
Yeah, there is. I appreciate you taking the time to do this. I know you, a million people reach out to you. I just appreciate everything you said and what you do. It's a breath of fresh air and you're using a platform like you've gone into the Death Star ship and are teaching the Force in a positive way. Like, well, I don't know if that's a great analogy, but it's,
I'm certainly trying, you know. Yeah. I appreciate the compliment a lot. I love what you guys are doing. I think to quote your sign behind you there, our habits have massive consequence. And I don't know if enough people pay close enough attention to what is a habit. And, you know, if you make a habit out of seeking you, you will find you. But it's something you have to do every day.
Yeah.
Because you are elusive. People don't realize that they are elusive. And who you are is ever changing. So don't think that the person you found yesterday is going to be who you find today, because you learn something every minute in your life.
All right, that's a wrap. Huge thanks to Nick for coming on the podcast. I told you, it was a heavy one. I hope you guys got something from it. Make sure you log on to Nick Poehler's Instagram, TikTok at the People Displeaser. Like I said in the beginning of this show, where you're going to get a free copy of the Bulletproof Boundaries Guide. That's it. I'll catch you guys next time. This show is brought to you by the team here at Consequence of Habit and is an arm of our 501c3 nonprofit. The show is produced and edited by the one and only Anthony Palmer and is part of the Palm Tree Pod Company network of podcasts.